Ministry of War. The company added that the use of its cybersecurity tools to monitor dissidents, activists, and journalists is a serious misuse of that technology. In a study published in December 2020, Citizen Lab identified 20 countries whose governments had acquired surveillance systems from Circles, a company affiliated with NSO Group. Australia, Belgium, Botswana, Chile, Denmark, Ecuador, El Salvador, Estonia, Equatorial Guinea, Guatemala, Honduras, Indonesia, the Zionist regime, Kenya, Malaysia, Mexico, Morocco, Nigeria, Peru, Serbia, Thailand, the United Arab Emirates, Vietnam, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The hacks of the activists in Jordan and Bahrain now add to two more countries to the list. The report documents how Pegasus can have a particularly egregious impact on women who are disproportionately vulnerable to the weaponization of personal information when governments seek to intimidate, harass, and publicly smear dissidents. In details, the case of Ebtisam As-Sawiq, a renowned human rights defender who works in Bahrain with the advocacy group Salam for Democracy and Human Rights. As-Sawiq's iPhone was hacked at least 8 times between August and November 2019 with Pegasus spyware, according to the researchers. The privacy violations extended what the report described as brutal harassment by Bahraini authorities. On May 26, 2017, the report said Bahrain's National Security Agency summoned As-Sawiq to Al Muharraq police station. Interrogators subjected her to verbal abuse and physically beat and sexually assaulted her. They threatened her with rape if she did not halt her human rights activism. Upon release, she was immediately taken to a hospital. The report quotes As-Sawiq as saying, "I am in a state of daily fear and terror after I was informed by frontline defenders that I was spied on. I started to be afraid of having the phone next to me, especially when I am at home among my family, my children, and my husband." Frontline Defenders' forensic investigation found that As-Sawiq's phone was compromised multiple times in August 2019. On September 19, 2019, and on November 22, 2019, traces of process names linked to Pegasus were identified on their home. Amnesty International Security Lab and the Citizen Lab have both attributed these process names to NSO spyware. Another victim described in the report is Hala Ahedib, a human rights activist and member of the legal team defending the Jordan Teachers Syndicate, one of the country's largest labor unions. The Jordanian government dissolved the union in December 2020 in response to mass protests. Deeb's phone was compromised by Pegasus on March 16, 2021, according to the report. Other victims mentioned in the report include Emirati activist Ala As-Siddiq, Al-Arabi journalist Rania Derdi, and Al Jazeera broadcast journalist Qada Oseis. The report calls for an immediate moratorium on the use, sale, and transfer of surveillance technologies produced by private firms until adequate human rights safeguards and regulation is in place, and a move to take serious and effective measures against surveillance technology providers like NSO Group.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, training children. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of training the children in the Islamic lifestyle. As we know that children are the main part of a family, and in Islam, there is a lot of emphasis on having children and making the new generation, bringing the new generation. Therefore, Islam has paid a lot of attention towards their training as well. It is not to just bring kids to have children. Rather, the important part is training them. And that is very important because in the Quran, we can see there are many verses, and also in the narrations, there is a lot of emphasis which talks about the training the children, how a father should spend time with the children, how mother should spend time with the children. And on top of that, because this training is being given to the mother, and obviously the duty of training kids is being given to the mother and also father, so there is an importance of this topic. Therefore, we can see that in the narrations, it is said that the A'imma alayhimus salam used to give importance to this topic, where they used to emphasize the fathers, or used to command the fathers to spend some time with their kids so that they are trained well, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of training children in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, when we say that Islam has paid a lot of emphasis on the training of children, it is because this is the children who will carry on what you have taught to them, or the next generation is the children. Therefore, in order to have a pure society, in order to have good people in the society, it is very necessary to train the kids or train the children in a way so that tomorrow when they go to the society, and tomorrow when they are serving the society, they can serve the society in the best way or in its best means. Therefore, this is important in Islam, that when we train the children, we train them in a way so that we can have a good society. And in today's world, when we look at all these difficulties, all these frauds or oppression or injustice, one of the reasons, and this is the first and foremost reason for having such a situation, is that in the houses, in the homes, we do not have a good training for our children. We do not train them according to the teachings of Islam. We do not train them to become good human beings. And therefore, when they are grown up, they become someone who is disturbing the society, who does not match the pure society. Therefore, we need to be careful, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Germany's stance in the escalating tensions between Russia and Ukraine is under increased scrutiny. Although other NATO allies, including the US, have also agreed to export weapons directly to Ukraine, the German government has so far declined to do so. The Wall Street Journal reported on Saturday that Berlin has refused to issue permits for weapons exports from Estonia to Ukraine.
The Germans do have a history of de-escalating and of not trying in any case to be in the forefront if there is any conflict. In the case of Ukraine, the official wording is that the Germans bear a responsibility for the happenings, the adventures of the last war.
German government officials have said they oppose sending arms to Ukraine as they fear that such deliveries could push tensions higher and make negotiations more difficult. That's while Germany remains one of the world's top arms producers and exporters, with sales increasing 21% from 2016 to 2020. Kiev is furious over Germany's decision and is accusing Berlin of encouraging Russia to invade Ukraine, while the Kremlin denies the allegations. The US, Britain, and several Baltic states have agreed to send Kiev weapons, including anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles. Meanwhile, some 90 tons of US lethal aid arrived in Ukraine on Saturday. The consignment is the first shipment of a $200 million package the US approved in December. Conversely, the shipment arrived hours after Russia's foreign minister and his U.S. counterpart held what they called frank talks to try to reduce the chance of a wider conflict in Ukraine. Also, it is believed that Washington is using the Ukraine crisis as a pretext to further its policy of attempting to restrain Russia and China. Washington has threatened several German companies involved in the construction of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline with economic sanctions. The completed multi-billion dollar pipeline is set to double Russian gas supplies to Germany, but has been entangled in a highly politicized approval process.
That pipeline, since more than 1 month, is ready to deliver it is ready to deliver all that is missing, or nearly all that is missing in the European and German market. But we are stopping it. We are blocking it on behalf of Washington. Crazy story.
Therefore, this is every indication that it is NATO members who are escalating tensions around Ukraine. The U.S., its NATO allies, and Ukraine have accused Moscow of amassing troops near Ukraine's border for a possible invasion. But Moscow says it has deployed troops along its western border to ensure its security in the face of NATO's eastward expansion. The UK has accused Russia of trying to install an ally in Ukraine. This provoked a strong response from Moscow, calling the allegations nothing but nonsense and disinformation. In a statement released on Saturday, the British Foreign Office claimed to have information that indicates the Russian government is looking to install a pro-Russian leader in Kiev and is considering a former Ukrainian lawmaker as a potential candidate. It also claimed that Russia is gearing up to invade and occupy Ukraine.
They are doing regime change globally, and they think this is their God-given right to do that. They want it for Iran, they want it for South American countries like Venezuela, they tried with Guaido. This is typical Western policy, and now they are accusing again, you know, another country of what they are doing themselves. That is also a very typical US and NATO story.
It seems that London is following in Washington's footsteps. It has also threatened Russia with severe economic sanctions if it goes ahead with the alleged scheme. The UK had also supplied 2,000 missiles and a team of elite troops to Ukraine this week amid rising tensions. The timing and mysterious nature of the intelligence disclosure coincides with bombshell revelations about a series of parties at Downing Street during COVID lockdowns, as well as a record inflation level. It is also fueling the widespread discontent with the Boris Johnson government. He is now facing resignation calls even from within his own party. This raises a question, and that is whether some in the British government are simply eager to deflect attention from the problems that threaten to topple Prime Minister Boris Johnson. For the first time, the Pentagon has declassified and publicly released footage of the U.S. drone strike in Kabul that killed 10 civilians, including 7 children. It was one of the U.S. military's final acts in Afghanistan before ending its 20-year-long military intervention in the country. The videos show the scene of the strike before, during, and after a missile struck a civilian car in a courtyard on August 29th in Kabul. Indistinct images show individuals moving in or near the attack zone. The Pentagon initially defended the attack, claiming it had targeted an operative of Daesh terrorist group. But in November, the Pentagon acknowledged it had committed a tragic mistake. Instead of terminating a terrorist, the U.S. military had killed a civilian and 9 members of his family. 3 months later, the department announced no one would be held accountable for the brutal carnage. Critics believe such reports failed to address the systematic problems in U.S. conduct of drone warfare, making future civilian casualties inevitable. Now, many Afghans, including the victims' relatives, want the Kabul strike to be regarded as a war crime. Afghans say the U.S. military had acknowledged such strikes as mistakes in the past, but their perpetrators were never brought to justice. Based on the U.S. military's own assertion, Washington has conducted almost 100,000 drones and airstrikes in the West Asia region in the past 20 years. The U.S. is also guilty of civilian killings in many war theaters, like in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, from drone strikes to other military action. Rights groups have also accused Washington of hiding the real number of civilian casualties and underreporting them.
Now, if you're talking about rules of war, the traditional understanding of the just war, the Geneva Conventions, any of these things, you cannot deliberately target a civilian population. That's a war crime if you do that. But it became the tradition. because of World War II. And because the United States won World War II, then they could establish this as a kind of right.
Despite the shambolic withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, the Biden administration has said it will continue to use aerial attacks, including drone raids, to deal with security threats in the country and counter Daesh terrorists. However, the killing of innocent civilians in Kabul raised questions about the future of U.S. drone attacks in Afghanistan. Now, advocates have decried the U.S. administration's stated plan. The Afghan-American advocacy group Afghans for a Better Tomorrow has urged an end to all U.S. drone strikes in the country, saying it's a failed policy that harms lives, destroys villages, and only allows for more violence to exist in Afghanistan. That's while the U.S. has a history of conducting similar strikes in Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Libya, Yemen, and Pakistan out of the spotlight without accepting any responsibility while destroying the lives of civilians. According to a new analysis published by the civilian harm monitoring group Air Wars, the U.S. strikes have killed at least 22,000 civilians across various theaters since 2001. The group says the number could probably be as high as 48,000.
The strategy of attacking civilians was established then. It's immoral. It's clearly immoral, but they've been doing it for 70 years now. And where do you draw the line? How do you say, oh, beginning in 1972, it became immoral? No, it's the whole tradition of air warfare is by its the way it's been executed here has been immoral from the beginning.
The high number of civilian casualties in U.S. airstrikes in various theaters calls under question the authenticity of Washington's claims of fighting terrorists and its intelligence precision. In late December, leaked Pentagon documents show that the U.S. air wars in West Asia have been marked by flawed intelligence, faulty targeting, years of civilian deaths, and scant accountability. This has further fueled the criticism of the Biden administration's Afghanistan policy and chaotic withdrawal of American troops from the country after two decades of war.
Iran, Russia, and China began joint military drills in the north of the Indian Ocean on Friday. Dubbed the 2022 Marine Security Belt, the exercises are the third to have been carried out between the three countries. The drills cover 17,000 square kilometers of ocean. Vessels and equipment from both Iran's army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps were on maneuvers. A variety of tactical exercises, such as rescuing burning vessels, releasing hijacked vessels, shooting at specific targets, shooting at air targets at night, and other tactical and operational exercises were carried out during the drills. Strengthening the security of the international maritime trade, combating piracy and maritime terrorism, exchanging intelligence in the field of maritime rescue missions, and exchanging operational and technical experience were among the objectives of the 2022 Marine Security Belt exercise.
Well, I believe that the message is mostly to the people and to the nation, like the United States or other allies, that they want to have, they want to carry on some kind of activities in these areas. And if you ask me if this one is something where it will create a kind of joint action between Iran, Russia, and China, I would say yes, in this area. I don't think that they will tolerate in the future any kind of activities that we can define as terrorist or attack or pirate or these kind of things.
Iran says its presence in the international coalitions manifests the improvement of the Islamic Republic's standing in the world. An Iranian spokesman for the joint drills says Tehran attaches great importance to the establishment of security at regional and international levels. The trilateral exercises come as Iran is taking steps to balance its foreign policy.
While talks on the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, and the removal of U.S. sanctions against Iran are underway in the Austrian capital, Vienna, Tehran is expanding its ties with its two key allies, Russia and China. Earlier this month, Iran and China began the implementation of much-anticipated Sino-Iranian pact, known as the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, a 25-year cooperation agreement that's aimed at strengthening the two countries' economic and political ties. Also last week, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said Tehran and Moscow are set to begin working on drawing up a similar roadmap that will shape their cooperation for the next two decades. The statement came as Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi was on a two-day trip to Russia. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization's unanimous decision last September to approve Iran's membership to the bloc after almost 15 years was yet another development signaling the future of Iran's economic and political ties with the East.
I think that the strategy of the geopolitics of the United States is in this area, and I will say basically in Eurasia, is in the way that they don't want the formation of a strong Eurasian continent. So, they're fighting basically against China and very strong against Russia, and they have first the sanction with Iran, and they put a lot of pressure to Iran. So it's normal that these three countries, they will join together from a different point of view.
What this all shows is that Iran's seeking a more balanced foreign policy, and that Tehran isn't staking its future entirely on the fate of the 2015 deal anymore. While making efforts to salvage the deal, it's considering other options to ensure its economic goals are met.
On Monday, Yemen's military launched retaliatory attacks deep inside the United Arab Emirates using drones and missiles to strike strategic targets in the UAE. Yemeni forces targeted a strategic oil facility and a fire at Abu Dhabi's international airport. The Yemeni military conducts regular retaliatory attacks against targets in Saudi Arabia over its devastating war on Yemen. But attacks against the UAE, which is fighting alongside Saudi Arabia, has been rare. It's widely believed that the attacks made UAE officials realize their vulnerabilities. The attacks are the greatest damage to the reputation of the UAE because they have always portrayed themselves as a safe and secure country to do business. Yemeni officials have warned they could target more facilities in the UAE. The years-long war on Yemen has killed tens of thousands of people and pushed the country towards humanitarian catastrophe. Following the retaliatory strikes, Israel offered security and intelligence support to the United Arab Emirates. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said the regime is committed to working closely with the UAE against Yemeni forces. He also ordered the Israeli establishment to provide their counterparts in the UAE with any assistance. Since joining the Saudi-led coalition in the invasion of Yemen, the UAE has focused on the southern and coastal regions of Yemen. It's also trying to take control of its strategic and resource-rich ports and islands in that region. Socotra is strategically located at the mouth of the Gulf of Aden, overlooking the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which connects the Red Sea to both the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea. The UAE is annexing the island with the help of the Israeli regime. The UAE is said to be setting up an espionage center for Israel at the Socotra airport in Yemen.
This is not the case. Israel has no business interfering in Yemen any more than Saudi Arabia or the United States do, or the UAE. But by this recent action, which is the people of Yemen simply defending their country and opposing one of the other countries that is causing significant, just extreme problems within Yemen.
Al Hilal Emirates Company is said to have signed a contract with Israel to build a spy and intelligence center for the Israeli Air Force at the airport in the city of Hadibo, the center of the Socotra Island. In December of 2021, Bennett became the first leader of the Israeli regime to visit the Persian Gulf state, more than a year after the two sides agreed to establish formal relations under a U.S. brokered deal.
Israel would like to see this as a false flag, would like to convince the United States government and the people of the United States that it must attack Iran because Iran has attacked one of its allies and poses a threat to the existence of Israel. Anything that anyone says or does Israel doesn't like, it considers what it calls an existential threat to Israel.
The UAE officially inaugurated its embassy in Israel in July last year, and then Israel opened its embassy in the Emirati capital in late June. Since they signed a normalization agreement in August last year, Israel and the UAE have signed a raft of deals in various areas, ranging from tourism to aviation and financial services.
Ocean of Dua. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. اللهم مولاي كم من قبيح سترتا وكم من قادح من البلاء أقلتا وكم من عثار وقيتا وكم من مكروه دفعتا وكم من ثناء جميل لست أهلا له نشرتا. Brothers and sisters, in this part of the supplication, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Allahumma mawlay, O Allah, O my protector, kam min qabihin satarta, how many ugly things you have concealed, wa kam min fadihin min al-bala'i aqalta, how many tribulations you have warded off, wa kam min itharin waqayta, how many stumbles you have removed, wa kam min makruhin dafa'ta, how many ordeals you have averted. وَكَمْ مِنْ ثَنَاءٍ جَمِيلٍ لَسْتُ أَهْلًا لَهُ نَشَرْتَ. How much beautiful praise that I wasn't worthy of, but you have spread about me. By this time, the supplicant, when reaching this part, is aware of the different signs of Almighty Allah's infinite mercy toward all human beings. The most important of them is this fact that if man commits a sin due to ignorance or negligence during his lifetime, but regrets and returns to Allah by beseeching him for repentance and compensation, Allah will forgive him. It is recommended that we recite this Dua ul-Kumail on Thursday nights, the night of mercy and the night of the descent of Almighty Allah's blessings to the servants. And the supplicant is aware of the fact that the Almighty Allah is able to do this. His power dominates everything in this world. So he can do everything to literally everyone in this world. By everyone, we mean all the creatures, all the beings, which have been created by Almighty Allah's mercy, whose exact quality and quantity no one knows and will know till the Day of Judgment.
Mm-hmm. one whose neediness is extreme and who supplicates his needs to you and whose desire for that which is with you has become great. O Allah, great is your kingdom and exalted is your greatness. Your plan is secret, your authority is manifest, your might is victorious and subduing, and your power is prevalent throughout, and it is not possible to escape from your dominion. O Allah, apart from you, I do not find anyone able to pardon my sins, nor to conceal my shameful acts, nor do I have anyone except you to change my evil deeds into virtues. There is no God but you, glory and praise be to you. I have oppressed my own soul, I had the audacity to sin by my ignorance. I have relied upon my ancient remembrance of you and your grace towards me. O Allah, my Lord, how many of my ugly deeds have you concealed? How many of my grievous afflictions have you abolished? And how many stumblings of mine have you prevented? How many of my detestable acts have you averted? And how many of my undeserving praises have you spread abroad?
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through. That God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
In order to be more familiar with how the Almighty Allah conceals the sins of the servants, how the Almighty Allah removes the barriers and stumbles from the servants' paths, we had a look at one of the traditions from the book Uddatul Da'i. Now, in order to conclude this part of the supplication, let's have a look at how Imam Ali alayhi salam himself talks about this phrase elsewhere. He says about this part, كَمْ مِنْ فَادِحٍ مِنَ الْبَلَاءِ أَقَلْتَ. How many tribulations you have warded off. He says, such as earthquake, storm, flood, fire, accident, famine, and calamities. He continues, how many stumbles you have removed which could destroy our beliefs. The stumbles you have removed could have destroyed our ethics. They could have destroyed our faces among the people. Then he continues about this part. كَمْ مِنْ عِثَارٍ وَقَيْتَ. He means, those ordeals which could destroy our calmness, which could bring anxiety in my life, and put pressure and difficulty in our hearts and minds. He further continues about the last sentence of this part. وَكَمْ مِنْ ثَنَاءٍ جَمِيلٍ لَسْتُ أَهْلًا لَهُ نَشَرْتَ. How much beautiful praise for which I was unworthy of you have spread about me, though I had committed so many sins. So my parents and my close ones thought highly of me. All my relatives have praised me, but I am not worthy of these praises. I did not deserve these praises. But the thing that is more important in this part of the supplication is that the supplicant is himself aware and he himself is confessing to these sins. Now he is aware of the fact that he does not deserve these praises. He is unworthy of these praises. But the Almighty Allah, out of his mercy, has spread them among his closed ones, among his parents and relatives. And this is another sign that Almighty Allah's blessings are great. When we say, Ya Azim al-Raja, we are calling him by this name, O the one whose blessings are great. Brothers and sisters, we are done with this part of the Kumail supplication, and we will discuss the next parts in the programs to come. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Now, with the Chinese New Year approaching, a Vietnamese artist is honoring the zodiac sign of 2022 by making different objects that look like tigers.
I often introduce collections for the zodiac animal of the next year. It's going to be the year of the tiger soon. There are 2022 carvings in this collection, which align with the number of this year. Also, I am very fond of tigers as an animal, as they are so powerful, yet so majestic.
Tam Pat has his workshop in a village on the outskirts of the capital, Hanoi. The 39-year-old artist makes tigers using wood from jackfruit trees, which Vietnamese often use to make spiritual items. He applies crushed eggshells and seashells to give shape to the tiger's stripes. The artist is also carving some tigers purely out of laterite, the mineral still used in some villages to build homes. It takes Tam Pat about 2 weeks to come up with a tiger-looking object. This year, he is trying to make his creations in a way that can be used in everyday life. A house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain momentum, some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with the novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PAMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. Abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
The plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zara says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zara had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zara says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be?
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful cards. Mayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist for the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent, and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, with little ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found at beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of these graceful reptiles. The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat, and a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mail, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to two centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
IRIB English Radio.